Lord, if by fire you led people at night, revealed what they could never guess, make clear what was strange, make new what seemed dead, then let this fire of yours come over and into me with warmth and with light. Okay, the copies of the outline of the Bible studies is over on the table, as well as bibliographies, if you'd like to help yourself on the way out today. This has nothing to do with the Sabbath, this particular thing, but I thought I'd share it with you anyway. He was an earnest, eager, but totally slow young lad working for a pet shop. It took him hours to clean out the few canary cages, another hour to feed the goldfish. And then he asked the boss what to do next. Well, said the boss, I think you might take the turtle out for a run. Anyhow. Before we proceed any further, I'd like to call on Bob to share some things with us today. I'm going to give him about 5 minutes here to share some thoughts with us that that I thought might be helpful and interesting. Okay.
Well, we're here in America on land that was inhabited from 10 to 50,000 years ago. Archaeologists aren't sure just how long. We have one Native American person, Mark Kremen. His Native American name is Teo, and he said artifacts of his coastal Salish tribe were dated to 17,000 years ago, which is 15,000 years before the time of Christ. So, and they have a indigenous spirituality which is remarkably monotheistic, and I don't want to go into a long lecture on that, but the Lakota, who I think originally came from the Carolinas and had to move to the Dakotas, though they're also called the Sioux, have a sacred tradition of the story of White Buffalo Woman. She's generally known as White Buffalo Woman, who came and gave them their sacred teachings about the sacredness of the Great Spirit and Mother Earth, called Mother Earth Spirituality by Ed McGaugh, who's also known as Eagle Man. And he's a Lakota medicine man, also happens to be a lawyer. And I heard him speak once. And the other is from the Sacred Pipe, which is an account of Black Elk's visions. He was lived into this century. So,
don't mind me, I'm just checking on the lights. Just keep reading.
I have to decide which version to read. And I may combine both. I'm going to combine both. Okay. The Sioux, this is the story of White Buffalo Woman. The Sioux, or Lakota, were taught and understood that all things are the Great Spirit, Wakantanka. Trees, rivers, mountains, grass, four-legged animals, two-legged animals, and winged creatures all came from the Great Spirit called Wakantanka, who is the Supreme Being. In modern times, traditional Sioux still practice their way. Holy men and holy women can be found on the reservations, and the ceremonies are still conducted. Some of these ceremonies are now taking place in the non-Indian world. Before the appearance of White Buffalo Woman, also known as White Buffalo Calf Woman, the Indian honored the Great Spirit. But among the Sioux, the coming of White Buffalo Woman brought a most important instrument, the pipe, which is now used in all ceremonies. The sacred pipe came into being many, many years ago. Two men of a small band of the Sioux tribe, Sans Arc, were hunting and saw something approaching in the distance. As the figure drew close, they observed a beautiful maiden dressed in white buckskin, carrying a bundle wrapped in buffalo hide. behold me, for in a sacred manner I am walking. She sang this out, and repeated the song as she walked slowly toward them. One of the men had evil thoughts about this maiden and moved toward her. The other hunter tried forcibly to restrain him, but the evil man pushed the good warrior away. A cloud descended on the evil one, and when it lifted, his body was a skeleton being devoured by worms. This symbolized that one who lives in ignorance and has evil in his heart may be destroyed by his own actions. The good hunter knelt in fear, trembling as the buckskin-clad woman approached. She spoke to him, telling him not to be afraid, but to return to his people and prepare them for her coming. This was done, and the beautiful maiden appeared in the midst, walking among them in sunwise or clockwise direction. She was called a Wakan woman, which means holy or sacred. This is a saint. She held forth her bundle and said, "This is a sacred gift and must always be treated in a holy way. In this bundle is a sacred pipe which no impure man or woman should ever see. With this sacred pipe, you will send your voices to Wakantanka, the Great Spirit, creator of all, your father and grandfather. With this sacred pipe, you will walk upon the earth, which is your grandmother and mother. All your steps shall be holy. The bowl of the pipe is red stone, which represents earth. A buffalo calf is carved in the stone facing the center and symbolizes the four-legged creatures who live as brothers among you. The stem is wood and represents all growing things. 12 feathers hang from where the stem fits the bowl and are from the spotted eagle. These represent all the winged brothers who live among you. All these things are joined to you who will smoke this pipe and send voices to Wakantanka. When you use this pipe to pray, you will pray for and with everything. The sacred pipe binds you to all your relatives, your grandfather and father, your grandmother and mother. The red stone represents the Mother Earth in which you live. The earth is red, and two-legged creatures who live upon it are also red. Wakantanka has given you a red road, a good straight road to travel, and you must remember that all people who stand on the earth are sacred. From this day, the sacred pipe will stand on the red earth and you will send your voices to Wakantanka." And then she said, "These are 7 circles on the stone, which represents the 7 rites in which you will use this pipe." And so.
That's the end of the story.
Well, there's more, but I didn't want to.
Okay, let's just take that amount. Yeah. Okay. Again, we have in Native American folklore, you have the closeness to the earth and the closeness to the animals, and the very kind of thing that Saint Francis of Assisi in the Christian tradition was talking about, and something that we want to again take another look at. See, you know, is the scripture kind of bringing us back to something like this? It was something at least akin to this. Okay, thank you, Bob, for sharing that with us today.
I just will read one more thing.
Okay,
this
sure.
This is from Ed Magara Eagleman.
Sure.
And just to read a paragraph, it's okay. Called Mitakuyi Oyasin, We Are All Related. The plight of the non-Indian world is that it has lost respect for Mother Earth, from whom and where we all come. We all start out in this world as tiny seeds, no different from our animal brothers and sisters, the deer, the bear, the buffalo, the trees, the flowers, the winged people. Every particle of our body comes from the good things Mother Earth has put forth. Mother Earth is our real mother because each bit of us truly comes from her, and daily she takes care of us. The tiny seeds take on the minerals and the waters of Mother Earth, and it is fueled by Wheel of the Sun, a spirit given by Wakantanka. You say ecology. We think the words Mother Earth have a deeper meaning. If we wish to survive, we must respect her. It is very late, but there is still time to revive and discover the old American Indian value of respect for Mother Earth. She is very beautiful, and already she is showing us signs that she may punish us for not respecting her. Also, we must remember that she has been placed in this universe by the one who is the all-powerful, the great spirit above, Wakantanka.
Thank you. Again, that makes me think of another word, too. Another thought about that, too, that the word ecology has gotten kind of overused and maybe doesn't mean anything to a lot of people anymore. So we probably should be trying to think of new ways of saying caring for Mother Earth, caring for the Earth, caring for the creation, whatever it is that might bring this to more meaning for us. So again, thank you for that. One of the dilemmas that we've faced in our interpretation of the Bible has been, why has it taken so long for some of these issues to come forth and to be meaningful to us, like respecting women? It took many, many centuries to get rid of slavery, and yet we go back and we restudy the Bible again, and we say, yeah, maybe the Bible doesn't want us to have slaves after all. Maybe the Bible does want us to respect women after all. And so all of a sudden, the light dawns centuries after this book was written. And why is that? You know, why does the Bible operate like that? And we talk about how we plant seeds. The Bible has seeds of truth in it that sometimes take a long time to germinate. But maybe it's more like, in this case, it's more like the seeds that have been put in a tomb in Egypt. And then the seeds are finally brought out many thousands of years, thousands of years later. And then you plant the seeds and they grow. And so maybe that's more like what's happening here about care of the earth. That suddenly we're discovering that there are seeds of truth in the Bible that are teaching us some new things about care of the earth and our concern for that. And the Sabbath can be one of these. The whole idea of what is the Sabbath all about? Is it just an old superstition that no longer has any relevance for us because we are of a multicultural, many kinds of religions, sort of a civilization where you have some people that worship on Saturday and some worship on Sunday? You know, how could you ever recover anything in the Sabbath that would make any sense for us today? And especially, what in the world would the Sabbath ever have to say about ecology? Does that make any sense at all? So we want to take another look at that today. Just take another kind of a look. Thomas Berry has a statement in his book, which goes like this. Again, one of the several books in your bibliography. He said, by the mid-18th century, the invention of new technologies had begun whereby we could manipulate our environment to our own advantage. With such happenings came a new exhilaration in our powers to dominate the natural world. This led to a savage assault upon the earth, such as was unconceivable in prior times. The experience of sacred communion with the earth disappeared. Such intimacy was considered a poetic concept by a people who prided themselves on their realism, sophistication, their aversion to all forms of myth, magic, mysticism, and superstition. Little did these people know that their very, little did these people know that their very realism was as pure a superstition as was ever professed by humans. That this so-called sophisticated approach toward life that people in our century have, where we feel we don't need all of these religious kinds of things like the Sabbath, the concepts of the Sabbath, that's kind of been relegated to the area of meaningless superstition in many ways. And yet, when we've done that, we've lost something, and we've put in its place something that's even less realistic, less productive, less meaningful. But let's get on now to look at some of these passages that have to do with the Sabbath. And let's start with the one in Genesis 2. So we need to get a few more Bibles out here, I think. Anybody want to grab a few Bibles and make sure that everybody's got a Bible? We'll start with Genesis 2.
Who needs a Bible?
And as we read these, just be alert to anything that this might have to say to us about care of the earth, as well as care of our own human of us as human beings, and for our own sanity and our own spiritual life. But now we're starting with Genesis 2, 1 through 3. So if one of you'd just read that, please.
Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all his work which he had done in creation.
Okay, we'll just kind of keep that one in mind. And again, just keep asking yourself now, how can this sort of oversimplified idea of having one day set aside, how can this possibly translate into our culture? And then how can it possibly have anything to say to us about care of the earth? Let's look at Exodus. It's the first of our two versions of the Ten Commandments. Go ahead, anybody?
Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. And on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your manservant or your maidservant or your cattle or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and hallowed it.
Thank you. Do you see anything at all in here that the Sabbath day is just for humans? What's the Sabbath day for besides humans?
Cattle.
Okay. We're expanding that a little bit now to some of the rest of the creation. Let's look at Exodus 23, verse 12.
Six days thou shalt do thy work, and on the seventh day thou shalt rest, that thine ox and thine ass may rest, and the son of thy handmaiden and the stranger may be refreshed.
Okay, all right, again, a reminder. Repeated reminders now that the Sabbath was not only for the benefit of humans, but for the animals as well. Okay, now we go to 34, 21. Just the sheer repetition and the amount of material that you find in the Old Testament about the Sabbath also is of significance here. Okay. 34:21.
6 days thou shalt work, but on the seventh day thou shalt rest. Earing time and in harvest thou shalt rest.
Okay. And in harvest. Okay. And when it talks about the harvest, does that begin to expand this beyond the animals even, to the land, right? We're talking about giving the land a rest. And then let's look at the other version of the Ten Commandments, Deuteronomy 5, 12-15. See what that version of this commandment has to say.
Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. The seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservant and maidservant may rest as you do.
Okay.
15. Yeah. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day.
Okay, thank you. Now, is anything beginning to emerge here, any kind of a pattern? Do you begin to see anything that can be helpful for us in our time here? This sort of an ancient kind of a a ritual that you know, how in the world can we apply this to our time? It's that second question that I'd like to ask you about. The first one was your opportunity to do a little bit reminiscing, but the second question, how do you think the Sabbath can help us rightly have dominion and not abuse the creation? This is, you know, it's really a struggle, trying to figure how we can take this ancient thing and apply it nowadays in some meaningful ways. So let's start over here with this group, and we'll just go kind of go right around here and just see what you came up with. You've got to come through with a breakthrough for us today. We got to figure out what we can do with this thing.
I like it as a day to contemplate nature.
A day to contemplate nature. What benefit would that have, do you suppose?
It's going to teach you to respect and have reverence for the creation of God.
Okay. A day to contemplate nature. Okay. Anything else out of your group here?
You don't have to do anything. Just sit and look at a tree or something.
Just sit and look at a tree. How about that?
Or a stream.
Yeah. Okay.
Or hiking if you want.
Or go hiking.
Or hiking.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Go ahead.
Time to renew yourself in nature, to perhaps get out into it and experience it, not from a workaday experience, but from just an enjoyment.
Okay. Renew yourself in nature. Enjoyment of it. Yeah. Did you?
We said, and doing so, we realize how important it is to us, and because it's important to us, we want to preserve it. We don't want to destroy it.
Okay, because that's the next step, isn't it? Once you begin to look at it, appreciate it, contemplate it, renew yourself in it, hey, I don't want to destroy this. We want to take care of it. Okay, all right. Okay, more? Others in that same group, in the same group next to it? Okay, others over here? Let's go right on around to the next group here. What did your, a lot of small groups here, so just speak up in from your group over here, somewhere over in this vicinity.
I just thought in terms, I'm a dairy farmer.
Okay.
And I thought in terms of a pastor and a dairy farmer. How do you have a day of rest on the Sabbath?
Yeah, I grew up on a dairy farm.
And I mean, as a pastor, your Sundays are taken up.
Yeah. And so,
when you come home, you want to take a rest, your neighbor's mowing his lawn, fixing his car.
Well,
okay.
I mean, it would be nice to be able to do these things, you know.
I've been waiting for 35 years to find an answer to that question. Maybe one of you can tell me today, and I can go on from here to do a decent job at that. What are some answers to that question? How can a pastor or a dairy farmer do this?
You have to take a different day off.
Yeah, that's right.
Take a different day off?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Over here.
I was going to say there are some things that have to be done.
Right.
And I don't think God expects us just to drop everything. Cows have to be milked.
Sure. Yeah.
But there are other things perhaps on that day that don't have to be done.
Okay. 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 All right.
That even though maybe the weather has dictated, well, maybe they need to be done. At least we feel from a human standpoint.
Sure.
But the pastor has to care for his flock on Sundays, and I really feel for that.
Yeah, so Sunday I got to work. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that if there's anything wrong with choosing another day, and we lived in a country where Sunday was not Sunday, Friday was Sunday.
Friday was Sunday, okay.
And so Friday became Sunday.
Sure.
So that's not an easy thing to do for people who live in a society where Sunday is Sunday.
Yeah.
But I think maybe.
Okay, and even in America, even around here, some observe Saturday, some observe Sunday. We have at least those 2 days that are both days of rest for certain people of different religions and cultures. Yeah, Bob?
I don't want to be a stickler, but the seventh day is Saturday.
Right.
And I'm a Jew, and I have to be a Jewish Christian, and Jews observe the Sabbath on the seventh day.
Right.
I always thought that the Sunday is the Lord's Day or the Day of Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about working on Sunday.
No. I should rest on Saturday. I should take Saturday.
The Norwegian calendar, it starts on Monday.
Norwegian calendar starts on Monday. Oh, okay. Do you want to say some more about that?
I don't know. I just observed it. I got a calendar from Norway, and it was Monday was the first day of the week.
Oh, okay.
Well, the other thing is we really don't know, in all our wisdom, which day is Monday. So we don't know which day. If we go back to the time the creation was made.
Okay.
I have a feeling that we got the days mixed up somewhere along there.
Okay.
I'd like to add here, in my years, I've come to believe that God is pretty smart.
Okay.
And it's wiser than we are, and that's why he said we should have a day of rest, but in the involved with it is to worship God.
Okay.
Because when people talk about going fishing, they can be so close to God.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York Pastor, I said, he had a trout fisherman that I was talking about, and he said to him, and I know when you're out there trout fishing and you get that fly caught on the brush, I know that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes our contemplation gets on everything except God, and we're concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That we worship the creation instead of the Creator.
Yeah, that's a danger. Yeah, somebody put it this way, that if you have a good attitude toward the creation, and you don't worship the creation, but you do sort of feel good about God out there in creation, you're still not getting the direction from God that you need. You can praise God and thank God out there, but there's nothing out there that's giving you direction and messages that can tell us new things about our life. Yeah?
How do you know that?
It seems like when we talk about that from the Old Testament perspective, God says set a day aside, I think what that also means is we look at the rest of the scripture that we set this day aside to remember him and what the gifts that he's given us.
Okay.
And to enjoy those gifts.
Remember, yeah, too. So today we can boil it down, even in our complex culture, there are some things we can boil it down to. Rest for one, rest for ourselves, rest for the animals, rest for the land. And we see a lot more about that as we talk about the Sabbath year. And then also worship. And recognize, and that helps us to recognize all of time as a gift, as you were saying, and so on. So with those basic things, how can we get a handle on making sure that God's intention for us, which is to have time for rest and time for worship, how that can be accomplished in this complex culture? Yeah.
I'd like to have you put worship above the rest.
Okay.
Because out of the worship comes the rest and the care of creation.
Okay. All right, we'll do that. The ancient, by the way, the ancient, as far as I can understand, in ancient times, even pre-Judaism, back in the time of the Canaanites in the land, they took a day of rest also. They had a day of rest. They had one day out of seven, which was very important for them that they took the day off too. It comes out of the Babylonian culture. Some of those ancient cultures have that particular plan. But what happened with them was that it was a very negative sort of thing. It was a day that they were afraid to do anything because the evil spirits would curse the day for them if they did anything but rest. And the Christians have infused some other important elements into this day. They still call it a day of rest, or the Hebrews, Hebrew people and the Christians, but have put a very positive twist onto this thing as a day of recognizing and worshiping God and learning to know where all this comes from, and have turned a very negative, scary event, a scary day, into a day which should be just full of joy and fun and happiness, the happiest day we can think of, can imagine, you see. Yeah?
When you said it, we spent a little time in Israel this year, and we happened to be at the wall on the Sabbath.
Uh-huh.
Everything in the Jerusalem section of the old city and town closed down. And there was buses that, except, you know, within the air, you know, there were still buses that ran, but everything in the city of Jerusalem that had some of those folks who were connected with the Jewish beliefs, everything closed down,
mm-hmm.
and people celebrated, and they came to the Wailing Wall, and they worshiped.
Okay.
It was just a totally different thing than what happens here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, and even in the town where I grew up, in the farm community that I grew up, my dad, we milked the cows. We had to do the chores, but we didn't do any field work on Sundays. All the farmers all around us were out in the fields, but you know, we couldn't, because my dad said no. You know, we just don't do that. So even in, you know, in almost all Protestant community that I grew up, we didn't have everything closing down. But nowadays in the city, it's Sunday's like any other day. But like you say, there you saw a complete shutdown. Yeah, Phyllis.
I guess I'm a visionary person.
Okay.
I've been really thinking about this, because I feel, especially in the Midwest, like Minnesota, we have so much changing to do. And sometimes I look at some of the non-Lutheran churches, different denominations. I like to see rest, worship all day. And I think we as a church have become guilty of, you run to church, 9 o'clock service. That means if I'm going to teach Sunday school, I had to get up at 6:30 to be functional, and I get up at 6:30 or 6 all week. It's like the church hasn't even stopped and made the day to rest anymore. To me, we should have opportunity to worship there all day and then go home and rest, and if we want to go back. But I can hear people saying, hurry up, get worship over because the Vikings are going to play. Why are we as the church doing what the world is doing? Okay, maybe some people want to watch the Vikings. That's okay. But those of us who are ministers need to be available so that all people can learn what the Sabbath is. Then we will have dominion and not abuse, us and the creation.
Uh-huh.
I have a vision. I've been talking about this in the church. I can remember when Saturday night worship started in the community. My God, I thought the world was going to clap. Nobody would come to Sunday school if we did that. Huh, what it did. More people started worshiping.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it turned out to be a good thing.
And I wish that would happen.
We need some innovative, some thinking here. Yeah, Bob?
Just a flash in the how in Portland, Oregon, and I suppose most cities, shopping centers and everything are open 7 days a week. And we moved from Maine to Oregon about 2 years ago. There, until about a year ago, until about the last year we were there, that wasn't so. The stores and shopping centers were not open. That was the law. And then they kicked out that law. Anyway, it is very kind of disrupting to have things going on to the nerves 7 days a week.
Sure, yeah. Do I see a hand back there someplace?
Yes, I was going to speak of nurses and people that keep electricity going, mm-hmm. all those that are on split shifts, just rotating shifts.
Yeah.
They have to make different days of rest, different weeks,
well, that's
different hours.
Right.
And they have to make it as a family, don't they? Each person, what is right for them.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. That's what you got to do if you have it. If you're in a particular job or situation where you have to do that, you bet. So we get it's a very complex culture that we're in, and we have to try to get back to, you know, what is it that we can get a handle on from these ancient commands that the Bible is so full of, this command to have a time of rest and worship, and to rest the creation, and to rest the animals. And we've come up with, there's some good suggestions that have come up here as to how we can translate this into care of the earth. Yeah.
I want to add something to the one that you had mentioned earlier. The concept of helping people see the importance of corporate worship as opposed to going off and fly fishing or whatever. It's been impressing me lately that God dealt with a people, not with individuals, and that worship brings the body of Christ together in ways that going out contemplating your doesn't.
Okay. Okay, and yeah.
One thing I'd like to bring up too is most of us as mothers and wives feel obligated to cook a fairly good meal even on Sunday, and I think we should all kind of rebel and cut down on that.
I hear a little bit of sympathy for that idea here. I think it is changing. Yeah, Myron?
Our Jewish friends have an answer to that because they don't cook on the Sabbath.
No,
they
that's right.
Eat less or don't.
They prepare everything before.
Yeah, get it all ready before. Yeah. Well, this is a complex thing. How can we get a handle on something here which can help us care for the earth, care for our own bodies, care for the earth? I certainly like this thought of renewing ourselves, and when you can do it, renew it out in nature, and then we won't want to destroy it. All of these commands, of course, come out of a very agricultural kind of a culture, and so it's so easy to apply back then, but how do we apply it now? That's the thing. Let me just say some things here that I picked up from Walter Brueggemann. He says that the Sabbath really is an assertion that life does not depend upon our feverish activity of self-securing, but that there can be a pause in which life is given to us simply as a gift. God does not spend the seventh day in exhaustion, but in serenity and peace. And then he says, Sabbath is a break with every effort to achieve, to secure ourselves and make the world into our image, according to our purposes. It's the end of grasping and therefore the end of exploitation. Now maybe we can get a little handle there or something. If the whole concept of the Sabbath is the end of grasping feverishly for getting ahead and so on, therefore we won't exploit. We won't feel so much like exploiting people and exploiting the land. Also, maybe that can be helpful there too. Sabbath is an unspoken prayer for the coming of a new sanity shaped by the power and graciousness of God. Dear Lord and Father of mankind, forgive our foolish ways, as the hymn says, and that sort of thing. And then Jürgen Moltmann has some thoughts on the Sabbath. And let me just share a couple of those with you. Often we humans have regarded nature only from the perspective of work. We have seen only one side of nature. That's the so-called usable side. The usable side. Therefore, there is, however, in ancient Jewish wisdom, a special resource for understanding nature as the creation and home of God. That is to establish the Sabbath, the day of rest, the day of not interfering with nature, he says. This through resting, God blessed creation, this divine Sabbath, not the creation of humans, is the true crown of creation. Think about that first creation story, the culmination, the big finale is not, now humans are on the scene. No, it's the next day God rested, the Sabbath, the institution of the whole concept of the Sabbath is the culmination of this whole marvelous creation. And it's so, and you know, we can't ignore that. There's something critical about that. Through resting, God blessed creation. Yeah. In a sense, humanity is crowned together with all other creatures through the divine Queen Sabbath. Humans, by their celebration of the Sabbath, perceive and allow nature to be God's creation. The Sabbath is both wise environmental politics and good therapy for ourselves and for our restless souls. He also says that during the oil crisis of 73, there was a Sunday in Germany that was declared an automobile-free day. He says, it was one of the most beautiful days I can remember. Children playing soccer on the Autobahn. Adults sat in the intersections playing cards. Dogs ran around the streets. Now, I suppose we couldn't do that. And our culture is a little too complex for that. But maybe we should try something like that once in a while. Well, yeah.
I think the Christians brought some of this on themselves. If we wouldn't go shopping and supporting all of these things, it would have some effect. I don't know if it would end it. But I think the Christians are as guilty as anyone for what has happened. For example, the Good Friday services, businesses in Midwest wouldn't let their workers go to Good Friday services. But instead of going to Good Friday services, they just went home. So they finally quit having that time off. And I don't know if they have an evening too, but Christians have brought a lot of these things on.
Okay, so it's, yeah, so maybe maybe Christians that have just, well, it's, so it's become an attitude of our own grasping and greed and our misuse of time, the whole concept of time and how we misuse time. It's really at the heart of this thing, and somehow that's, we've got to get at that critical thing. You know, how do we look at time? How do we see time? Get back to that, to ask ourselves that question. Because somewhere we've missed the boat on that, haven't we? Like you say, Christians have. Yeah.
I really think time management is the key to this, because one of the things that you quoted was that we're not meant to reach the Sabbath in exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I think we do. You know, I work in the church too, and I know by Sunday afternoon I feel pretty exhausted.
Okay.
And it's difficult to even take the time to get out of nature, because we're a society that works hard and plays hard.
Yeah.
Know?
Okay.
So that too, we can get caught in that kind of trap of overly doing everything. I know how my mother, even when I was a child, would work like crazy on a Saturday, you know, to have everything ready for Sunday. And I know she reached Sunday with great exhaustion.
Okay, so somehow if we could just ease into Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday time management would be a key thing, okay? That whole business of... Yeah, did I see another, one more hand over? Yeah, Phyllis?
I'm wondering sometimes if we also miss the boat that if we have a little Sabbath each day of the week, maybe when Sunday came, we would realize the Sabbath is really a boat.
Yeah, the suggestion that every day ought to have its components of rest and worship, that we ought to get our lives together in that kind of a way, and then we'd be prepared, much better prepared for the thing. We need to get on to a couple more things here in the Sabbath year. The Sabbath year is a major thing, and let's look at that. First of all, in Exodus, we'll get to Leviticus 25. Yeah, that's the main chapter. Exodus 23:10-11. I just couldn't put all these passages up there, but on the board, but we'll just touch on Leviticus 25 in just a second here. Okay, first of all, Exodus 23:10-11. We're into the Sabbath year now.
In 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the wild beasts may eat. You shall do likewise with your vineyard and with your olive orchard.
Okay, thank you. Then let's look at Leviticus 25:1-7. The rest of the chapter deals with the Jubilee year, every 50 years, but we won't really get into that much today. We just mainly want to look at this one for a little bit. Leviticus 25:1-7. Look for anything in here now that we could get a handle on for our time as far as care of the earth.
The Lord said to Moses on Mount Sinai, say to the people of Israel, when you come into the land which I give you, the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. In 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its fruits. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. What grows of itself in your harvest, you shall not reap, and the grapes of your undressed vine you shall not gather. It shall be a year of solemn rest for the land. The Sabbath of the land shall provide food for you, for yourself, and for your male and female slaves, and for your hired servant, and for the sojourner who lives with you. For your cattle also, and for the beasts that are in your land, all its yield shall be for food.
Okay, thank you. Now, do you see anything in these two passages that would be of any help to us in caring for the earth? Seventh year of rest, again, it's like the seventh day, the seventh year. The land needs to rest. The beasts of burden need to rest. The ones that we work, we'd be working on that day. Bob?
this is kind of treating the earth as sacred, not as a machine or something that you use for making money or something.
Yeah. It's again, it's an attitude, isn't it? We're getting back to an attitude of our use of time and use of the, this is God's world, these are God's animals, this is God's land. It gets back to an attitude about who do these things belong to?
It may be biologically very sound too.
Of course, sure. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think this is a lesson we learned in the 30s, in the Plains States, you know, when they seeded everything.
Dust Bowl,
The Dust Bowl, and the land was worn out, and they couldn't grow a thing. They've now learned that they have to rotate crops and summer fallow and let the land rest.
Right, sure, yeah. Yeah, Phyllis?
I think we can really learn, this is what I've been trying, this is a new venture in my life. I get to do work, I don't watch it. So I have to stop it. But you know, this can have a message, it says every seventh year. Maybe we have a time that I do that at my work, you know, I have 50 meetings to go to, it seems like. And I don't mind working, because I love it. Work for hard for 7-8 weeks. But then there has to be a point, now this has been a really strenuous time and stressful. I pull back, I go to work less hours a day. And if my boss doesn't like it, he should just get rid of me because my work won't be done, you know. I think we have to take the initiative sometimes and tell the people we're employed. And I've told my staff I'm not coming in till 10 because if I come at 8 in the morning, I'm still here till 6:30.
Sure.
But I think we have to take a hold of it with our busyness. Okay. Maybe every 3 months we have to take off 3-4 days. If we could learn to do that, which is so hard sometimes.
Sure.
But we have to take control of it.
Yeah.
I really believe God says, take care of yourself, you'll know me and others after that.
Okay. So again, it's a matter of attitude, it's a matter of perspective, it's a matter of getting a handle on life. You want to hear a really scary warning? This comes in Leviticus 26. And I'm going to read, I'll just read it to you. Leviticus 26, 34 and 35. It says, I will scatter you among the nations. This is because God's going to punish the disobedient, those who don't keep these commands. Your land shall be a desolation, your cities a waste, because then the land shall enjoy its Sabbath years as long as it lies desolate. While you are in the land of your enemies, in exile, the warning that they would go into exile, as long as the land lies desolate, it shall have the rest it did not have on your Sabbaths when you were living on it. That's a scary warning, and that's what happened. They were carried off into Babylon in exile, and then the land got its Sabbath rest that it didn't get otherwise. But now listen, here's what Moltmann says. Here's a remarkable ecological interpretation of Israel's exile in Babylon. God wanted to save the land. God let the people be deported to give the land rest to recreate. The Sabbath year in God's conservation strategy for the earth and all its creatures. Now listen to what he says here. The result of our progressive poisoning of the soil with herbicides, insecticides, fertilizer, etc., will be similar, only worse. Non-stop exploitation of the soil will lead to exile and extinction of humankind. After the death of humankind, nature and the earth will have its Sabbath rest, which modern humankind so far has denied. That's a scary one.
Who's that?
Jürgen Moltmann, German theologian.
Brilliant.
That's a scary one. I don't want to end on a scary thing, but we're getting close to time. So we need to just, let's end on a positive note here. Let's just keep asking ourselves, how can we get a perspective on this sort of thing for our own lives, for the world around us, for nature? How can we return to the concept of the Sabbath rest for ourselves and for the land, a sabbatical restraint of the self from intrusion into a whole area of life that doesn't belong to us. This would not only be self-preservation, but an act of praise and a way of praising the Creator to be able to, and it's not an easy thing to get a handle on, but we need to struggle with this, and we start with ourselves and we go out from there. We won't talk about the year of Jubilee, That's another whole.
One interesting thing in the year of Jubilee with what we're talking about, though, I just happened to skim through the chapter.
Okay.
And it's talking about how when you sell a piece of property in the year of Jubilee, it's going to come back to you. And it says, when the years are many, that is many years until the year of Jubilee, you are to increase the price, and when the years are few, you are to decrease the price, because what he's really selling you is the number of crops. And to think about the fact that we don't really own the land, God owns it.
Right, right.
That we, what we own is the ability to use it. Mm-hmm.
That's right, exactly. And then also the basic concept that time is holy. Time is holy. It isn't a commodity, it is a holy thing. That is a terribly crucial thing that comes out of the whole Sabbath thing. And this has endless ramifications for ecology, as well as for the care of our own beings. I'd like to just end with this little blessing. And the peace of God be with the land and the sea, with the forests and the meadows, with the flowers and the animals. The peace of God be with us in community, with all our fellow creatures. Amen.